So I really only follow boxing. No, not MMA or UFC. I hate that shit. But I was visiting my mom, and so we watched the first game of the World Series between my two favorite cities, New York and Los Angeles. And the first game was pretty tense. But I haven't watched a full game in a while, and I was like, Jesus, it seems like they did a lot of intentional walks. I don't remember those happening as much in the past as they did in this game. It was a strategy, I guess, and it didn't really work, at least for the Yankees in the first game. And the other thing I noticed was, holy shit, the amount of pitchers that they used. I was like, how many different fucking pitchers do they have? It was almost like, okay, we have a new pitcher in the game. He threw one time, and let's get another pitcher in here, okay? I almost expected them to run out of pitchers and then have some guy come out in a disguise, like with a big handlebar mustache. And it's like, doesn't that pitcher look like the guy from before? But anyway, it was an exciting game, no doubt. So I have so far successfully reduced my alcohol intake for now, with the occasional misstep. I've completely stopped the vaping shit, I think for good. But I'm still working on cutting back on the nicotine gum, but I can only do so many things at a time, you know. When I get stressed at work or whatever, which is often, I tend to chew more gum. My life lately has been kind of reminiscent of the famous scene in Airplane from 1980 where the Lloyd Bridges character was trying to quit some of his vices. And with all the pressure going on at that time, he starts relapsing. It gets progressively sillier from, like, looks like I picked the wrong week to give up smoking, to looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines. And then it goes on to, like, looks like I picked the wrong week to quit sniffing glue. Anyway, very funny movie, though some of it is so off color it probably couldn't even be made today, like some of Mel Brooks' stuff. I mean, have you seen 1974's Blazing Saddles recently? Holy shit. I mean, it's funny, but it's so over the top tasteless. So anyway, this guy at my work, who will not be named, name starts with an L, ends with an S, rhymes with Lucas. Anyway, he had some of those Zyn, Z-Y-N nicotine pouches. And you would think that your not-so-humble narrator would know at this point not to introduce some new drug delivery system, knowing my tendencies towards addiction. And let me tell you, these little pouches are evil. They're like Satan's sachets. They don't last very long. You soon find yourself popping one in after the other. It's a little like vaping. There's no limiting mechanism. Smoking cigarettes is a task. I mean, it's a process. You can't fucking smoke nonstop. But these devious inventions are enabling people to use nicotine whenever, wherever. And let me tell you, people get addicted as shit to this stuff. So don't be an idiot like me and stay away from this stuff. I'm pretty much just back on the gum, and I will taper that down and stop eventually. I've done it before, and I can do it again. And again. And again. Like Pee Wee Herman said in Pee Wee's Big Adventure, it's like you're unraveling a big cable knit sweater that someone keeps knitting and knitting and knitting and knitting. So anyway, I see Smile 2 did pretty well in theaters. It's gotten decent reviews, but I refuse to see it in the theater. First off, it's over 2 fucking hours. And secondly, the first one sucked. Talk about a short film idea being turned into a full-length movie. And I'm sorry, the idea of someone just smiling weirdly and then stabbing themselves or something just isn't scary to me. The first Smile from 2022 was garbage. It starred Sosie Bacon, which kind of sounds like a type of food to me. Sick and tired of regular old bacon? Then get Sosie Bacon. It's leaner, it's sweeter, and you can put your tools on it. You knew that was coming. Anyway, Sosie Bacon is the daughter of Kevin Bacon and Kira Sedgwick, and she kind of looks like a weird mixture of them both, which isn't a bad thing per se, it's just a little distracting. And yes, I hear Smile 2 is much better, more complex, scarier, but the preview looked lame, with the usual bunch of people smiling stupidly. I mean, I will check it out when it's streaming, and maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised, who knows. But I'm not sitting in a theater for 2+ hours to watch people smile. My ass is still recovering from the absurd length of Terrifier 3. And there's also a Michael Ritchie 1975 film called Smile, set in a beauty pageant, an interesting satire with Bruce Dern. It's almost been completely forgotten. But you know what Smile I do like? The song Smile, originally written by Charlie Chaplin for the 1936 movie Modern Times, yes, I must see. There's also a great version by the King, Nat King Cole. And the version by Michael Jackson always tears me up a little bit, but what a pretty song. And I love the whole theme of the song. I always try to smile and joke, even when I'm struggling or feeling really dark inside. So here's a little bit of that song. Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. If you smile through your fear and sorrow, smile and maybe tomorrow, you'll see the sun come shining through for you. All right, let's begin.
You are my density. You are my density.
And yes, I'm currently applying to some jobs in Los Angeles. I will get back there eventually when the right opportunity shows up. But I'm on a month-to-month lease in Sunnyvale, so that relieves some pressure. When I find something good, I will go. And yes, I may go back to the acting class I took down there. I think that would be my third or fourth time in the class. But I was thinking the other day at work, and I was like, man, psych nursing is kind of like the best improv class you can do. There's always such unpredictability, you never know what's going to happen. And you really have to be good at dealing with shit on the fly. I mean, I make a lot of funny voices at work or tell jokes, or you might be talking with a patient and the conversation just gets weird and you have to run with it or find a way back to some reality-based conversation if it gets too bizarre. And there's a value to being silly or lighthearted when appropriate in the psych hospital setting. Everyone likes to laugh, even in their darkest moments. I mean, sometimes I dance, sometimes I sing, and often I think to myself, okay, who's the nurse here and who's the patient? But I do try and honestly talk with patients about my struggles and my failings and my maybe perseverance. Also, I think my later in life career change can give some solace to people. It's like, yes, you can reinvent yourself. It's never too late. And I've had some off and on, mainly on experiences with antidepressants and other drugs, as previously mentioned. So I can also offer some input on that stuff if I'm asked. And I know antidepressants have a bit of a checkered history. Some people think they don't work, and honestly, I don't even think the jury is out on how they do help depression. Some newer research shows that the whole selective serotonin reuptake inhibition with the SSRIs may not even be the thing that helps. It may have to do with some other like nerve growth factor in the brain that SSRIs can influence. But anyway, Jesus, enough science. But I think antidepressants have helped me through many rough times. Maybe it was placebo, who knows, but I've always found value in kind of being proactive. And when I'm taking a pill, at least in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm doing something to try and get out of this rut. I'm taking some action. I remember several years ago, I was reading about the benefits of like some brain stimulation shit with electrodes. So I bought some do-it-yourself kit to try on myself. And you probably know how this is going to turn out. So I don't know, I guess I did something wrong or left them on too long, but I put the fucking electrodes on my forehead, turned the machine on, and then after about 5 minutes or whatever, I took off the electrode patches, which also took off a small chunk of skin where the electrodes were on my forehead. And I still have a couple of scars to this day. But I think I did feel a little better after doing it. No, just kidding. I was just so pissed, and of course that was the end of that experiment. But yeah, depression, psychosis, all this shit is so hard to treat. No one knows exactly what works, and sometimes you have to try multiple things. And honestly, some people are never able to be truly relieved from their depression. But everyone usually gets a little bit better at the very least. And yes, I hate the idea of artificial intelligence in general, but I think in like medicines and maybe for like depression and some other illnesses, AI may be helpful at some point. AI is good as looking at like a shit ton of data, and maybe there'll be a way to make medicines more targeted and more effective at some point. Okay, one last quick stupid hospital thing. I was doing an EKG on someone. I was having someone else help me, and so I was looking at the EKG monitor, and I was like, yeah, it looks pretty good, except for the 1, 2, and 3 electrodes. And then the nurse helping me said, yeah, I haven't put those on yet. And I was like, well, that could be the problem. And then I started laughing. So anyway, I've been working through this funk lately. It's not getting worse, but it's taking longer to feel better than I'd hoped, but it's manageable. It's apparent when I'm not doing so great because I don't call my mom every day. That's a good barometer of how I'm doing usually. So it being Halloween time and all, I decided to watch the 1985 movie Silver Bullet, based on the Stephen King novella Cycle of the Werewolf, and man, this movie hit the spot. Directed by Dan Ataus, in his only directorial feature, it stars a young, just cute Corey Haim as a paralyzed kid who has a motorized wheelchair, and he thinks there's a werewolf killing people in his small town. It's got the stepfather's Terry O'Quinn as the local sheriff, and a great Gary Busey as Corey Haim's rebellious but fun as hell Uncle Red. This is like Gary Busey at his best, just like funny and wild, but like completely endearing. It's pretty corny, but it has a great playful vibe. The werewolf effects are cheesy, but man, it's 1985. It has a few scary moments, some humor, some camp, but it's just a fun, likable movie. And interestingly, the movie features two actors that had some serious drug problems, one that survived those problems and one that didn't make it. Gary Busey legendarily had drug issues, bizarro behavior, some domestic violence, and a cocaine overdose, but he survived, damaged as hell from his experience, but he's lived to tell the tale. I read that his dog once rolled around on his cocaine stash, and Gary Busey proceeded to snort the cocaine off the dog's back, butt, and side. Aren't drugs glamorous? And of course, when I saw the innocent young Corey Haim in Silver Bullet, I couldn't help but think of the sad figure that he turned into. Corey Haim and his buddy Corey Feldman were famously in the great 1987 vampire film The Lost Boys, truly one of the best vampire movies ever made. Corey Feldman got into some weird shit as well. And if you've never seen his god-awful Michael Jackson-inspired dancing scene to the song Dream a Little Dream from the movie Dream a Little Dream from 1989, please go watch it. I don't use the word cringy often, but this is like as cringy as it gets. It's like whenever I watch it, I'm just literally like, ooh. And I used to love his co-star in the film, Meredith Salinger. Corey Haim is also in the movie, and man, that movie sucks. Corey Feldman also has some kind of band as well. I saw him perform at some morning show years ago, and it was easily one of the top five worst things I've ever seen. But back to Corey Haim, the guy had a pretty bad crack addiction fairly early on, and he was just never completely able to shake his addiction to drugs. He would be clean, then relapse and overdose and so on and so forth. There were also some allegations that he and Corey Feldman were sexually abused in the movie business, and I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't true. That's the trouble with stardom, man. You're young, you're famous, you've got a lot of money, maybe you're a bit sensitive or just prone to addiction and it will just get out of hand. And kudos to those actors that have been able to survive the moral wasteland of Hollywood. But unfortunately, Corey Haim just eventually hit rock bottom. And though he ended up dying of pneumonia at the age of 38, the drugs definitely took their toll on the poor guy. I saw some pictures of him not too long before he died, and the guy just looked bloated, sad, and just completely worn out. Success can be a motherfucker for sure, and the guy just put himself through the ringer. I saw an interview sometime before he died and he just looked terrible, but he was talking about how he was doing good and he had some projects coming up, and it's just like, man, forget the fucking projects, get yourself healthy. That's the other thing, you have to know when to pull the plug on your Hollywood ambitions. Every career has a shelf life, and yes, I'm sure it's hard to exit, you know, the fame and the adulation, but for most actors, you either exit on your own terms or you just slowly wither away. You don't want to end up like Sunset Boulevard's Norma Desmond, delusionally hoping for a comeback that will never come. And briefly on drugs, I read in Germany that cops shut down a pizzeria that was selling a certain pizza with a side order of cocaine. This was the number 40 pizza, one of their best-selling pizzas. The pizza manager was arrested, then released several days later, and this dumbass reopened his pizzeria and started selling the number 40 pizza again. This guy clearly wasn't the brightest bulb. The German police ultimately busted an entire drug ring. This reminded me of many, many years ago in Los Angeles. There was a drug dealer in Hollywood, and people would call him and order one pizza for a gram of coke or a premium pizza for a higher quality coke. You would meet the guy on a street in Hollywood and make the exchange. Sordid times these were. And with the recent death of the One Direction singer Liam Payne, I read about this shit called TUSI, T-U-S-I, a.k.a. pink cocaine, which is some colored powder that contains a motley crew of random shit, sometimes cocaine, sometimes not, sometimes MDMA, ketamine, methamphetamine, some designer drugs. I mean, it's basically a bunch of shit almost designed to make you go psychotic, if you do enough, which sounds like what happened to the guy from One Direction. Yes, I understand the appeal of drugs, but when you start haphazardly combining shit, that's when you get into serious trouble. I mean, the classic drug combo back in the day was the speedball, a little up, a little down, a cocaine-heroin combo that led to the demise of John Belushi in Bungalow 3 at the Chateau Marmont in Hollywood. And I read a pretty insightful review of the Book of Letters of the somewhat troubled British neurologist Oliver Sacks, he of the famous experiments with the drug L-Dopa, that informed his 1973 book Awakenings, which of course was made into the big-time 1990 film Awakenings, directed by Penny Marshall, starring Robert De Niro and Robin Williams as the Oliver Sacks character. But anyway, the book is called Letters by Oliver Sacks. And Oliver Sacks had a tendency to overindulge with sex, with food, with drugs. And the last paragraph of the review says, what was Sacks trying to satiate? His substance abuse, the workaholism that eventually displaced it, speaks of the addict's need to fill a void, an effort to forestall the unbearable loneliness that might accompany a moment's rest. Man, that's pretty spot on. Well done. And in closing, I watched a completely stupid but completely fun movie from 1993, My Boyfriend's Back, directed by the actor Bob Balaban. You know him, he's like the bespeckled, nerdy guy from a bunch of movies, including Close Encounters of the Third Kind from 1977. And speaking of that film, the terrifically talented Terry Garr just died. Rest in peace. But man, I was feeling like garbage, and this movie cheered me up. The plot is ridiculous. A kind of dorky kid comes up with some plan to woo the most beautiful girl in high school. He ends up getting killed in the process, but he comes back from the dead to try and take her to the prom. It's got the likable Andrew Lowry as our lead hero, Johnny. Tracy Lind is the unbelievably hot Missy McLeod. And get this, Philip Seymour Hoffman, here billed just as Philip Hoffman, is a completely dumbass jock bully. He's kind of hilarious in it. And Matthew McConaughey, he has like a tiny role as another jock who sees the undead Johnny hanging out with Missy in the movie theater. Mary Beth Hertz, spouse of the often mentioned Paul Schrader, and the late Edward Herman, who memorably played Max, the head vampire in The Lost Boys. Yes, that movie again. They're kind of hilarious as Johnny's parents, who barely even blink when their son shows up one night after they went to his burial. The movie's short. It's got some ridiculous shit where Johnny's like slowly starting to fall apart. One scene has him and Missy making out, and his ear falls off. And I love the fact that Missy is still into Johnny, even though he's dead. There's a corny line in the beginning where the undead Johnny returns to school, and he says in the voiceover, "I had all the right moves. I was like Tom Cruise, only dead." And there's a line delivery by the veteran character actor J.O. Sanders as the sheriff that I laughed out loud at. And actually, I rewound it so I could see the part again. Someone gets killed at the high school, and there's a news reporter out front filming. The sheriff comes out, and the reporter says, "Sheriff, we just received word that some kind of tragedy has happened in the high school." And the sheriff says, "No, nothing unusual." And she says, "I'm referring to the slaughter." And he says, "Right, well, there was that." So anyway, check out My Boyfriend's Back. I swear it'll cheer you up. Hopefully the last few episodes have been okay. I'm not back at full speed yet, but I'm getting there. So talk to you soon.